turns on. Let me see your feet.
30.
They're coming down.
Great. Okay, very good. Let's do two more.
T-minus 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, go for main engine start, 4, 3, 2, 1, push to ignition and liftoff of Discovery and a team of explorers shaping their destiny.
Roll program, Houston.
Roger, roll, Discovery.
Houston is now controlling. The roll maneuver is complete, and Discovery is now in a heads-down, wings-level position, carrying the next resident crew to the International Space Station. Minutes into the flight. And the booster officer here in Mission Control confirms separation of the solid rocket boosters.
Welcome to Houston. My name's Don Sikoras. I'm the University Affairs Officer here at the Johnson Space Center, and it's my pleasure to welcome you here to the KC-135 Student Flight Opportunities Program. This is a choice that you made, and we're real glad that you made the choice. We hope that your experience here will be unforgettable, and we do promise that it will be unforgettable.
We think that intellectual curiosity is the key to discovery, and that's what NASA is all about, is discovery. Discovery of the new, the unknown, the beyond the norm where other people think. We invite people with that spirit, that adventure, and that quest for knowledge to come and experience something that is really unique. Take advantage of it. Get a chance to talk to anybody around here. All of us have unique experiences, and we'll be glad to share.
Well, we're very happy that you're here, and as you've heard, safety is very important. It's an industrial type area there, and we do have hazards that may be unseen to those that are not from the area or from an airport type atmosphere. So stay in your work areas, stay on the NASA property. One of the things that if you need a tour, we'll see that you get a tour, but don't go out walking around the airport alone. We do have the F-16s down on this end, and you will probably run into an M-16 before you run into an F-16. and they're very serious, especially in these day and times.
There are actually quite a few people that are back for a second time. Apparently, didn't have enough the first time. In all seriousness, how many people have already flown with us that are here? Look around the room, folks, because those are going to be some of your best resources as far as, you know, talk to them, find out what they did, what worked and what didn't, and how we can try to help you out. That's what we're here to do, is try to help you get through the next 9 days. And incidentally, I'm going home at night, so I'm not going to be here all 9 days the whole time. It just because you're students doesn't change the mission we fly. So because of that, you've been given some packets, some do's and don'ts, some safety of the flight line, even some maps and things like that. I know you're disappointed, but I'm not going to read every one of them to you. It is your responsibility to know that. Ignorance, unfortunately, out here is not an excuse. The stuff we deal with is very serious. You'll notice this is a very, as Angela mentioned, this is a very, very safe workplace. We have an excellent safety record on the ground and in the air, but it is a very hazardous playground. It's not the place to fool around. It's not the place to kind of guess and say, well, maybe this is okay. Bottom line is the information in those packets is your responsibility, and we are absolutely here, all of us, to help answer any questions you have. Bottom line is, please ask. If you're even remotely unsure of something, please ask. It's not a big deal. It's a lot easier for us to say, yep, that's fine, than try to pick up after some accident or some mishap. If nothing else, it may just prevent you from flying the experiment that you need to fly. You guys are welcome to be here 7:30 to 4. If you need any other time or whatnot, make sure there's an Aircraft Operations Division NASA person here with you to make sure that you can do what you need to do. So welcome and have a great week. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Mike Fox, and I'm in the Life Sciences Directory, and I'm your coordinator for all your physiological training. And if you have any questions, you'll direct them to me. Let me go over some of the ground rules with you, especially out at the NBL. NBL is a secured area by NASA. Everyone has to have a badge over there, above and beyond that, the badge that you have here. So when you arrive there, they're going to be swapping your badge out with one of the NBL badges. And it's an escorted badge only, meaning that you can't go anywhere without one of our instructors being with you. Caught walking unattended, they will usher you out of the building, so you need to know that up front.
Juan Moran, that's my name. Chico, that's my nickname. I picked that up when I was active duty Air Force. I guess I'm a recycled, retired, regurgitator, whatever you want to call me after 26 years in the Air Force, so I've done my stint in, as the old saying goes. The 26 years was spent in physiological training, of what you're going through, all right? 13 years research, and then 13 years doing the educational side or teaching the folks who want to be pilots or crew members or whatever, giving them the information that they need so they can get their stuff done. And the same thing that we're going to be doing today, you know, letting you know the information that you need in case the aircraft loses pressurization or why we lost a peanut that was just given to you yourself by Southwest Airlines and all of a sudden it goes out that way and you're going, ah, chihuahua, what am I doing here? Right? So this is quite the first hour is going to consist of. Okay, anyway, the atmosphere, make sure. Okay, we need to know about it because, like I said, we're going to expose you to low pressure, low altitude. Main thing is we're breathing oxygen, all right? This is what we're doing, keeping ourselves satisfied. The other thing, the air that we have that's around us also has traces of inert gases, but the main one, O2 and N2, or oxygen and nitrogen. Nitrogen balances us out, and it becomes a culprit when we fly. All right? Stay aware of that. Where do we function effectively? Where are we, as individuals, stay in control? Where do we lose it? And the key point that I always tell folks, when you person out to say, I lost it now, all right? You know? Are you that kind of individual? That's the key point right here.
What it goes down to is, if we have all this oxygen around, we can breathe it. But if there's a contaminant there, that pressure has changed, or the concentration has changed, guess what? Our bodies are not adapted to that, it's going to have problems. Loss of gas diffusion, it's easy. Where are you going to go? To this party that is boring and there's no other music you like, or to the music that you like? Where they have all the goodies and everything and your girlfriend is over there, you know, in this other party. Which way are you going to go, guys? Hey, it's common sense, right? But believe it or not, there's sometimes some difficulties that our body experiences that will not allow it to, that law to come into play. So we break the law or we bend it. You'll notice a drastic change. Another thing that you will notice, and it's because of the amount of oxygen you get in your system, is discoloration in the face. They start getting lighter in color, lighter, lighter. Some of them will look like just like that white paper in there. And they'll go, number seven, are you okay? Number seven, eyes are open. And you go like this in front of them, and they number seven, go back to oxygen. Okay? But we can go ahead and see that at the bottom of the lanterns. We've had the most peaceful and quiet girl. Throw the clipper, says, I'm not going to. Bang!
That's what three steps to Valsalva. That's the mask and helmet we're going to give you guys today for the flight. The reason we give you this mask and helmet, first of all, it looks pretty stupid, right? Because we put the chin up just a little bit, and then we close off the nose, pinch it off, take a deep breath, and you close the glottis, and then you blow. Everybody try that. Has everybody done that for a doctor in your flight physical? Anybody not? Right? Anybody not done it? Yeah, but we see that a lot with the medical briefings, depending on where you came from. So, keeping your mouth and nose closed tight, do a Valsalva. Does everybody feel the ears moving? Anybody not? Now let's take a look at this decompression sickness thing that we talked about. What happens if you do get decompression sickness? We're going to put you in the dive chamber for about 4 or 5 hours, and that's it. I've been flying in those chambers, high altitudes. We've never had a case of decompression sickness with an astronaut in all these flights we've done in space. It means reduced pressure. Very, very rare. But when they do happen is, if I scuba dive and I come up from 120 feet without stopping, that happens. Everybody agree with that? Scuba diver, they tell you to stop. If I go from 8,000 feet in that airplane to 40,000 feet without any pre-breathing and all these things we're going to talk about, you increase your chances, especially if I stay up there.
This chair, it's not supposed to click. It's supposed to be so well balanced, but it's not. It's older than me, probably. Okay, you ready? And you got the instructions. Close your eyes and let's go. Oh, look at this one. She's so light. And you have no idea. Whenever you take a person out, you think after a while you can tell if they're going to be a good spin or a bad spin. But some people you can spin them, and nothing. And other people, two spins and they're bam, they're ready to go. Hey, smart pants. Did you? Which way are you going now? She has no idea which way she is. Okay, this is, you can sit tight for a second until you get your bearings, and then you can exit stage. Okay, why don't you? Well, let's give you a couple more seconds. You're quite a tough guy. He's smiling, isn't he? Yes, he is. So I want you to look at the instrument over your right shoulder.
Take it off. Put your right hand. Let me have your thumb. Push that button right there.
You want to go ahead?
It's coming. get air in up there.
Okay, how's that feel?
Yeah, your brain,
you know, you can move it around where it feels a fairly comfy fit and all that. Okay. And it feels good right around. What we're going to do a mass leak on you. Okay, I'm going to ask you to exhale. When you do, I'm going to plug the bottom end of this hose, and then I should take a deep inhalation breath. If the mask collapses around your face, we have a good seal. Otherwise, yeah. Okay, so first you're going to exhale, I plug the bottom end of this, and take an inhalation breath and see what the mask does. Okay? Ready? Exhale. Good. Inhale. Good deal. You had the mask collapse around you, and you could not breathe, and your eyes crossed, and you were turning red. So I got everything in there that I would need to find out.
Be able to breathe now. Maybe a little bit restrict.
Actually, no, I have not. Oh, okay. I missed. So.
All right, I want you to exhale and then inhale.
Well,
you
we'll
inhale,
something.
I'm going to close the hose. Okay, exhale.
Inhale. Pretty interesting
in the air.
Look, do this.
That's how you're going
to get it. Okay, that's right. Now, let me okay, push with your thumb. Push that button. Push it this way. There you go. That's the way you take it off.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, first thing I want you to do is find that green supply lever on your regulator. That's the regulator on the car on. All right, just so you know the difference in the two. And then if you look at the flat part of the console, that's that intercom box where we have a round knob about the size of a nickel with a white slash. That's what you use to adjust your volume control. First thing I like.
Okay, we're coming into 10,000 feet now. What's significant about 10,000 feet?
It's a safe level for breathing.
Or using what?
You don't have to use the mask. Anything
yeah,
under
okay.
10,000.
Very good. 02 over 10.
Hold the mask. Not the even numbers. Not the even numbers. Just those with a clipboard. Okay? Just hold the mask to your face. When everybody's ready, then we'll all drop the mask at the same time. Okay, you all ready to try? All right. You can drop the mask. And we're going to keep a time hack out here. We're going to keep the time. Go ahead. Drop your mask. Let it go. Okay, take a look at the worksheet there. You don't need to do anything with it, but just look at it. Get familiar with it. On the right-hand side, there's an area there where you can write your symptoms of hypoxia. When you feel a symptom, write it down. I'm going to call off the times, 1 minute, 2 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. If you have everything back together, we want you to write your signature down there again. Look up at the other side of the chamber. You'll see some color wheels. Okay. Watch them. See if you can pick up any outward signs of hypoxia, any changes, maybe to their breathing, how they look. They turn lips turn blue. What happened? And number 9 is taking in a couple of deep breaths there. You notice that, number 9?
Yeah.
Little air hunger. 5 minutes, that's the outer limits of time we use for consciousness. Youngsters, okay, number 5, you're having a good time, huh? Ready to go back on?
Yeah, what do you do
first? Across the chamber at the color wheel there, see what it looks like now. Look up at the instruments in there. Okay, we're coming up on 4 minutes, or 4.5 minutes, 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Let's go ahead and everybody get ready to go back on oxygen. Everybody go ahead and correct at this time.
Radiator, that's number 6 and number 4. You need to get back on oxygen.
Everybody go
to the regulator first and get all three switches up on the regulator. guys are messed up, aren't you? They can't...
Back on. That looks pretty good. Good recovery to me.
We are loaded. You're below.
It's aggressive.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, first thing I want you to do is find that green supply lever on your regulator. That's the regulator on the on. All right, just so you know the difference in the two. And then if you look at the flat part of the console, that's that intercom box where we have a round knob about the size of a nickel with a white slash. That's what you use to adjust your volume control.
Do you want to go back on oxygen?
No, I was just wondering if we were supposed to be doing the problems on the left-hand side.
Kind of look at that elephant and see how many legs are on that elephant. Four legs, you sure?
For me it is.
Think you need your oxygen back yet?
I'm good.
Okay, we have 4 minutes and 40 seconds off, okay?
Okay, I think you need some oxygen, don't you think?
Okay, let's go ahead.
I think you do. What do you have to do first? Do that first.
Put the pencil back in the clip. Gang load the regulator.
Come on. You gotta do that first.
Gang load the regulator. Get the mask up.
Just hold it up. There you go.
Come on, number seven. Get your mask up.
There you go.
Slip this glove and a balloon down there. Look how big it is. Look how big that gas is inside your stomach.
Look at the camera.
Yeah, don't forget to smile. Every now and then, take a look at the collar wheels located on the side of the wall there and see if that collar has deteriorated any at all. The 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Okay, well, I'd like to have you do everybody that's still off oxygen is write your pharos, hold it up to your face.
Watch how plush she gets.
See how the red her skin turn? Okay. Sit there and breathe normal. And when you feel back to what you did before this demonstration, then take that red toggle switch and put it into the normal setting.
We are loaded. You're below.
It's aggressive.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, first thing I want you to do is find that green supply lever on your regulator. That's the regulator on the on. All right, just so you know the difference in the two. And then if you look at the flat part of the console, that's that intercom box where we have a round knob about the size of a nickel with a white slash. That's what you use to adjust your volume control.
We've got a couple of folks in the small windows on the sides that are taking your picture. They want to see what you look like when you're hypoxic, and I see people trying to act really sober in there.
Number three's got a grin on her face.
Oh, does she? Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Number five just joined in.
Squinting going on back there. Huh, what color wheel? Yes, you. Can you find the color wheel? 3.5 minutes. Now, this is where people kind of really start to lose some useful consciousness. This time you can drop your mask. Okay, take a look around. Doesn't feel any different, does it? That's one of the dangers of hypoxia. You really wouldn't know until you're a little hypoxic. So, take a breath. Now reach up and turn the green switch to the off position.
I feel fine, number eight. That was so funny. You were giggling just now. Oh, I heard. Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought maybe he got the funny writing demonstration. Okay, we're coming up on 2 minutes. Any other symptoms that you want to write down? I see it all the way around. Good job.
One more. Do the red one. There you go. You got the care number one. That's the reason. Okay. Good deal. Just hold it there for a minute. And you start recovering. Your two lights red. Hook up. You'll be all set.
This is Mike Dancer, and I'll be talking to you about this our experiment here. Just to introduce the team, we got James Tinsley here. Around the back, we got Reagan Taggett, one of our high school students, Karthik Balakrishnan, and our other high school student, Andrea Cribe. We got Kathy Gallagher, David Harris, and wrapping it up is Jason Gallagher. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be welding aluminum in a weightless environment to see what happens to the strength of the weld. And we're going to do it using this machine here. The machine consists of a couple of magazine racks. There's one for the delivery system and one for the recovery system. What these systems consist of are just a bunch of pins that create a series of shells for our test strips. And then in the middle, we have a box that is actually going to have the welding process taking place in it. So for the experiment, what we're going to be doing is we're going to feed a test strip through out of the delivery system. It's going to be fed, driven through by DC motors through the weld box. It's going to be welded together, and then it's going to come out the other end and be stored in the recovery system motor. And we then, once one goes through, we can use these indexing mechanisms to raise or lower the magazine racks to make sure that we have a new test strip lined up at the opening and a clear opening at the exit of the weld box. And just some of the other stuff, we're going to be welding with just a regular industrial welder that we've modified slightly for this application. We have a Class D fire extinguisher for safety purposes. We also have a data acquisition system for the scientific aspect of the experiment so that we know what the G-loading is at every single point in the weld. As you see, they're lighting up, indicating that everything's working. Turn on the weld box motor, and this gets a little noisy. Okay. And start up the safety switch on to simply not strike any arc. I'm not going to mess with doing that. And then we'll simply push on the strip. Nothing's here.
County Community College and Brian Embry, and we're trying to show the way the human brain behaves while performing tasks in space. We believe that while measuring the brain waves, zero gravity can help make and high movements more efficient, possibly cost create and redesign flight suits and or tools depending on the way certain tasks are performed. The equipment is, we have the EEG that's on our head, then we have a virtual reality visor. Right here. Here's the VCR, is the Xbox, power surge, the TV. And the observer will be watching the TV. The test subject will be wearing the visor and the EEG pouch. And the EEG and the VCR will be running simultaneously to collect their data. And we'll also do a zero G. And then when we land, we'll also do a controlled technique. And on the EEG, there's a button that we're going to hit every time we hit the top of a parabola to mark our data.
Using visual surveying based on real-time camera input and maneuvers using cold gas thrusters using air as the propellant to perform station keeping in free fall. The principal hypothesis is that we can achieve adequate performance using off-the-shelf hardware and common camera and CCD sensors and visual surveying as opposed to specialized techniques such as gyros or some more.
How big is your air supply?
Our air supply is two tanks, 88 cubic inches each, compressed volume, 4,500 psi.
Of air?
Air, yes.
You're going to pad the rest of this?
Yes,
this
is the sample padding corner down here.
Okay.
We just thought you'd leave it off so you can see it.
Okay.
And everything gets heavily padded.
What kind of rates?
The acceleration is very low. I mean, if you put a Newton onto 20 kilos, it's not going to get far.
The other problem is, of course, that you have it's not a true zero gravity, it's a microgravity.
Yes, Jeff, you're with the Harvard team. We are testing single rescue air CPR in reduced gravity while having the victim under strain. So this is our mannequin here that we will be using as a test subject. The mannequin has some electronics in the cavity
that will measure the depth of compression done by the rescuer and the time at which a ventilation goes through. This board here we built to simulate the CMRS, which is the standard medical equipment that NASA equips on space shuttles with. For the first six parabolas, we will do restrained CPR to gather some control data. On either the seventh or eighth parabola, we will let the mannequin loose. It will be only held by the tether to make sure that it doesn't fly off. And then we will perform CPR in the, using a bear hug maneuver. So, the rest of your position is behind the mannequin, and then we perform five compressions and a ventilation. And the goal of this is to see if these compressions and ventilations meet the standards set by the American Heart Association for CPR done on firm ground. We essentially have three analog signals coming out. We have our depth of compression, our ventilation, and we also have an accelerometer to make sure that we are under zero Gs. These three analog signals get taken in by the, this is the BioPak MP100 system. This is standard equipment to capture data in the medical field. This equipment is connected to a to the laptop computer. It all uses BioPak's proprietary software. So when the rescuer is performing CPR, we will have an assistant working on the laptop. And Patrick, do you want to demonstrate? So when we are ready to begin, the assistant will say begin and hit the start button. And at that time, he will begin doing the compressions.
And fix on where you just shake it.
And all of the data that we're gathering is going in at 200 kilobits per second. And these are just our graphs to make sure that the data is working. But we do register numerical values that can then be imported into a spreadsheet or any other software.
Researching bubble coalescence. Bubble coalescence is essentially the combination of two smaller bubbles to form one larger one. The way we're running the experiment today is we're going to inject bubbles with these syringes, very small, probably between 0.05 millimeter diameter and 0.5 millimeter into the system. We'll rotate the gears back, release the caps, let them fall through, and combine with these two rotating arms right here. Here we have an air exchange tank, which has got a little bit of volume of water to provide a pressure head on top of the system. So any air bubbles caught in here will be released up into the chamber through during 2G and out the pressure relief valve. We've got two 20-watt halogen light bulbs on the sides, which they get hot, but not hot enough that you're not going to get burned with incidental contact. Right here, we have an accelerometer that's plugged into our power supply. This is pretty much hands-free. We're going to turn it on right before the first parabola and just leave it for the rest of the time. We've got data collection with two general video cameras and accelerometer for our outreach section. We also have our flight schedule posted here, our flight plan in case people forget on the back, and an emergency operations plan also is posted on the back in case our flight crew gets incapacitated and can no longer shut down the experiment if need be. There's also an electrical kill switch on our power supply.
That'll shut everything off?
That shuts everything off.
I'm the team leader of the EKU Space Technology Research Team, acronym EKU START. Our project involves mixing and microgravity. We're trying to determine proper methods for mixing, and we're using two spin vanes instead of the normal one spin vane you would see in a chemistry lab. I have black felt on the side here for light damping. I'm going to go ahead and remove that so you can see inside the box. What we have deep inside the cavity here, see there? We have approximately 1 gallon of water. We also have a white high-density bead. We have an orange low-density bead. We have a few of those that are getting very close to a neutral buoyancy. They are sitting down at the bottom. We have the two spin vanes, which are wood encased in a fiberglass coating. And they are on a slight drive shaft that has been sealed, running to what is a Lego Mindstorm motor. The motor is housed in plastic, and to our test has been proven to be watertight. The motors themselves are powered by black cords, which run to an RCX motor or microprocessor, which is inside the box. The processor is run by six AA batteries. Close down, it can be operated by a handheld remote, which will be strapped to our wrist to prevent any flying loose.
My name is Marcel Pickens. This is Kendrick Cloud, Tanisha Bedford, Natasha Thomas, Taylor, excuse me, and Sarita McConnell. And together we are Team Tigers. Tiger is acronym for Tennessee State University's Isolated Gravity Experimental Reduction System. The objective of our experiment is to isolate the vibrations of the test cell with respect to the aircraft. What we have done, just a brief overview of our equipment, we have 8 compliant interface connections, which will be raised later on. But 8 compliant interface connections at the corners, at the 8 corners. We have our test plate. We also have 2 accelerometers. Accelerometers, they measure the acceleration of the test plate and also the acceleration of the aircraft. This is our science experiment. Underneath, we have 4 elevated bumpers, which will help prevent some of the deformation that will possibly be encountered during the parabolas. We also have the data acquisition system, which is not here at this time, which will be arriving later. But the data acquisition system will basically record the accelerations of the accelerometers throughout the experiment. And we have these vice grips right here, which is how we plan to secure the test plate during takeoff and also landing. An alternative solution that we have for securing the test plate is using a cargo strap and drilling holes within our test plate and securing the test plate within the frame by use of cargo straps.
Attached to the frame of our system. The microphone will be used to basically provide a time stamping of sorts to give a relation to our bubble experiment. Our bubble experiment, if you can see, I'll even raise it up so you can. It's a simple science experiment where it has bubbles falling through a less dense fluid. And this is what will be attached here to our platform. This is really for a visual representation when we're doing our outreach for the students in our community. A lot of times it'll be a little bit too difficult for them to understand accelerometer readings and everything, but they will be able to see the displacement or the different accelerations of the bubbles in microgravity as opposed to a normal gravity environment.
Hearing aspects of the project. We have a 3-prong experiment involving common fruit flies, Drosophila melanogaster. The first prong of the experiment is an analysis of the behavior of the flies in microgravity or variable gravity situations. We intend to analyze their behavior in this section of the chamber with a video camera, a digital video camera. The second prong of the experiment analyzes the molecular biology and the molecular biological response of the flies exposed to variable gravity. We intend to do this by various metabolic assays that we can perform, as well as microarray analysis of the gene expression of the flies. And finally, the third prong is to assess the longevity of the flies exposed to microgravity. Previous data shows that flies carried aboard the space shuttle show reduced lifespan after 14 days in space, and we'll see if variable gravity does the same thing.
So the equipment's pretty simple. It mounts easily just with the 2 bolts, which is important because we're going to need to take it off and put it back on between all the flights because we don't want to leave the flies in the airplane. And then the other chambers, like Vincent said, for the free flying flies. And so the blue plastic is porous, but the holes are small enough so the flies won't get through. But at the same time, they'll be ventilated and won't die from an asphyxiation. We actually have 2 arrangements. One is horizontal like that, and the other one is vertical, which actually we were planning on switching it while you guys are interviewing other people. We're looking.
How are you?
Good, you're up.
Hi. Let's start off with our objective. It's to test the effects of reduced gravity conditions on capillary action. We don't expect that gravity ability to affect the capillary action itself because it works on a molecular level, so there's not much of that gravity effect there. However, it does affect surface tension, and we expect the surface tension to dominate, increasing the cohesion effect. Structurally, it's rather streamlined and simple. We have, this is all Lexan type plastic with aluminum diamond plate. This is neoprene. It's all bolted in steel bolts. These are scotch-coated sleeves, and our experiment, we'll be putting our arms through here, and we'll have latex gloves on to prevent any kind of exposure to any kind of liquid or anything like that, just to prevent any kind of leakage or of liquid. We have the foam padding to protect against any kind of injuries. We're going to have these kinds of structures. They're capillary tube assemblies. Oh, I'm sorry?
There's one on top.
Oh. They're capillary tube assemblies. We don't have them here because they're rather these wells, they're ELISA wells that are cut up and prepped with the liquids inside, and we don't want them to get, you know, like accidentally deployed. So we've left those all back at the hotel. Under each cup of liquids, we have water, acetic acid, typically vinegar, immersion oil. We have crystal violet, and both ethanol and methanol, and all that was included in the data package.
A study of the behavior of magnetic particles on that end of it, and we're measuring magnetic susceptibility on this end of it. We're using Helmholtz coils that have the potential, the max voltage we could put across them is 120. We're going to be running more around 50, 60, and the most voltage we can put through them is 12. We have the ability to put 20, but they won't go higher than 12. We have three voltage supplies at the bottom. Each half of the experiment has a kill switch and a master kill switch right here. Any questions? Would you like to see it work?
Yeah,
okay. On this end of it right here, when we go into zero G, we'd excite this right here. When we got into zero G, we turned it back down and let the magnetic particles act amongst each other. Over here, we could have we could put a DC field on it. So as you see that, we could turn it up, and turn it down, and control what they do a little bit. We have vertical AC fields and horizontal AC fields, and the two outside coils are just DC fields. We can switch right here between the vertical and horizontal. And over here on this part of it, it's just easy as we set a voltage and we pick whether we want our slow data or fast data, and the computer records everything for us, and we just hit save periodically. We use the video camera to record all our information on the left half.
What are you measuring?
We have a drive coil right there, and we're pumping current through it, and on the inside we have two pickup coils. A reverse wound.
Okay.
And so when we put a sample in one, we can zero it out.
You're testing the coupling of the coils. Is that it? Okay.
Kamani, Lauren, Rajul, we're from Arizona State University. Our experiment deals with the electrical activity in the brain at a 1G environment on Earth and in a microgravity environment on the KC-135 in a comparison study. In doing this, we believe that on the KC-135, we'll be able to see a result in an alpha wave brain pattern into a slower state of perhaps a beta pattern. In order to do this, the supplies are an EEG machine, ambulatory device, as I'm wearing right now. On the pack side, it's run by two 9-volt batteries. Only one is used in the actual voltage, so it's a 9-volt system. The second's a backup battery connected up here to electrodes. In order to connect them, we use, we prep the skin, glued on using gauze tape, and then the entire head's bandaged and then wrapped again. This way nothing can come out, and the only part coming out of the back is this one tether down in the machine. This is padded padded view window for taking out the reading so the machine doesn't have to be taken out. It's strapped around the test subject. On board, the test subject will also have a notebook in which they will write their observations down that the experimenter, which the second flyer will be. They will have a notebook and administer the test. The three tests we have are a light flashing in the eye, which will be done with just a standard flashlight running on a AA battery. The subject will have their eyes closed. The light will be flashed in their eyes. Second subject is writing down math problems that are given orally. This way we get an oral dictation part from the hearing, and the person has to sense it, think about it, and then write down the answer in the math problem. It'll be simple problems, 2 + 3 × 4, something not they can do in their head, but enough to stimulate the brain activity. Once that test is, we also have writing words backwards. Start with their name, move to more complex words. This will all be done with their eyes closed, even though it can be done with opens, to amplify the signal you get from the EEG machine.
Good gentlemen, we're the West Virginia University Microgravity Research Team. My name is Charlie Battleson. This is Paul Kreitzer, Shannon Glassbell, Michelle Lecklider, Brianne Williams, Mike Campanelli, Nick Frederick, and Chris Sunderland. The flyers, we're wearing the blue polo shirts right now. The mission this year is to explore the effects of evaporative spray cooling and microgravity. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to attempt to control air bubbles inside of a paramagnetic fluid by using a magnetically induced Kelvin force. And from over there, you guys probably don't have the best view of what's going on, so I welcome you to just kind of come in a little bit closer and see. What do we hope to see here? What are we hypothesizing? We're going to develop an artificial buoyancy inside our tanks by pulling down a paramagnetic fluid with our magnet. And hopefully that's going to displace the air and push the air bubble up inside our inner tanks here. And we also have, for Mr. Yannick, I don't know if he's over here yet, but we also have a couple modifications to our test equipment data package. And I guess I could pass this on to you, Don. To get to our equipment, our frame is an 80-20 1-inch rail. It's welded and bracketed on each corner, and it's been load tested. Our tanks over here, we have an inner containment and an outer containment for our test area. And the inner containment, it's got the evolution of our inner tanks over the past few years has kind of increased or improved greatly. And we have a slot and groove joint, so we're pretty sure it's not going to leave or it's not going to leak out of there. But I want to emphasize that our tanks are not pressure vessels. We do have everything vented. The way we're going to keep this fluid inside the test area as the air is being pumped into it is we have a nylon mesh and a screen mesh that will be placed on top of the test area that will allow the air to flow through but not the liquid. And that will all be sealed on the edges by plumber's putty. If something does happen to get out of there, we have double containment. This outer containment is going to be sealed with gasket grease. We're also going to have sponges and chem wipes on the airplane in order to absorb anything up.
What's working as a one-way membrane?
What's that? It's
what's working as a one-way membrane?
We're putting a screen and a nylon mesh together on top, and we've done a lot of experimentation with it. Only the air is allowed to pass through that as it goes into the test area, and the fluid will stay down in the microgravity conditions. It won't be floating anywhere. Now our pump, inside here we have a Hamilton syringe pump, and we're going to have two 100 milliliter syringes inside of there, and the pump is actually programmed to run for 45 seconds in order to get the, at certain rates that we will program into at the, we're going to do it every 3 parabolas. So with our procedure, which I'll get to later, I'll explain a little bit more about that, but it's going to push the syringes, the air is going to go and flow right into the inner tanks down there.